Today, I'm going to be answering a question that I hope you guys can, that you will believe is important. I think it's very important. And the question is DNSSEC right for me? Now, you're all security people. You may be saying, well, Wilson, security is strictly better than less security. And it turns out that up until our work, there's been no hard, fast evidence that this is actually the case. And this is what we set out to answer, and we're gonna see some of the results. So to give you a little bit of background, the domain name system is a system that we all know and love. We all use it every single day. Every single protocol that we use relies on it, pretty much, because it provides the mapping from domain names, human-readable domain names like google.com, to the IP address that your kernel actually needs in order to go and talk to google.com. And so just to give you a picture of how this works, say you've got your client and he wants to go and get some cat pictures or some cat videos. So his friend sends him a link and it says youtube.com. Well, where's youtube.com? I don't know. The client is going to go talk to his recursive name server, send a query. The recursive name server knows or can find out where YouTube's authoritative name server is. It passes the request on. The authoritative name server takes that request, processes it for a bit, sends back a response. Now the recursive name server can cache that response and pass it back to the client. The client takes that response and shoots off a request to YouTube, and he gets back his cat video. Everything's great. Now, unfortunately, DNS was designed back in the 80s, back when the earth was pure and there were no bad people in the world. But then there were bad people. So let's see what happens when there's a bad person involved. The client sends off his request as usual. Recursive name server forwards it to youtube.com's name server. YouTube sends back a response, but then all of a sudden our attacker, who we will say is an active network attacker, meaning that they can drop, modify, or add packets at will, drops the response, puts in their own, and that invalid response in turn gets cached by the recursive name server and sent back to the client. Now the client is going to go and make a request, but instead of talking to YouTube, they're going to talk to the attacker, and they're going to get something that they didn't really want, and maybe it's spam, maybe it's a phishing site, who knows, but it's not good. So DNS was once a good system, and still is a good and necessary system, but is woefully insecure, as I hope I've convinced you of. But the IETF, in their infinite wisdom, designed DNSSEC. And in 2010, it rolled out to the DNS root zone. And what DNSSEC allows zone administrators to do is cryptographically sign their DNS records. So now a zone administrator can publish a public-private key pair and use the private key to sign DNS records. And so they have a signature for all their address records and their mail server records, and they send those back to the client along with the actual records themselves. And using a chain of trust, clients and their recursive name servers can validate the authenticity of those DNS records. DNSSEC has the feature that it supports incremental rollout. So the root zone had it in 2010, but most sites don't have it now. Less than 0.25%, I want to say, of .com sites have DNSSEC support right now. And DNSSEC was designed in theory for backwards compatibility, meaning that a DNSSEC-enabled resolver can deal with old DNS and it'll pass it along just fine. And DNSSEC should also not break old resolvers who have no idea what DNSSEC does. As we'll see, this is not exactly the case in practice. So back to our question, is DNSSEC right for me? Well, without DNSSEC, all of your clients are vulnerable to tampering, no matter what. However, if you do turn on DNSSEC, you can help some of your clients. Few of your clients will be vulnerable to tampering, maybe all of them, in an ideal world. However, there are stories, the reports, that DNSSEC can make certain middle boxes on the internet just fall over when they see a DNS record. So as a domain administrator, you can't be sure, at least unless you have hard data, and that's what we're here to answer. So how can I decide if DNSSEC is right for me? Well, I have a great idea. Let's do some scientific measurement. So what are we going to measure? Well, in the world, there are three different classes of domains. There are those that have no DNSSEC. There are those that have DNSSEC that validates and checks out fine. And there are those that have kind of messed up DNSSEC. So some signatures are off, the implementation of someone's DNSSEC signing software is messed up. And these kind of look a lot like tampering to a recursive resolver. So we assign the names NoSec, GoodSec, and BadSec to these three different classes of domains. And what we did was we bought a domain and delegated subdomains of that domain in each of these three classes. We have a normal NoSec domain, a GoodSec domain, which we signed, and we created 25 different types of BadSec domains where we twiddled with bits and messed with the DNSSEC signing software to make it produce incorrect signatures, similar to what an attacker might do if he saw your DNSSEC packets on the wire. So now that we have these domains, we need to see how clients respond or react when they try to resolve them. So how can we make people go to one of these domains? Well, we have some options, I guess. We could, if we were Mozilla or Chrome, we could stick some code into the browser and roll it out in a patch. Now, everybody who uses our browser would all of a sudden run our code and try to access our domain. But we're not Mozilla, we're not Chrome. So what else can we do? We could try to run on Planet Lab or Measurement Lab. Unfortunately, these don't give us a representative sampling of the clients in the wild, because these are a couple nodes at universities and research institutions. They're well connected, they're well administered. They're not representative of some guy with his laptop in a Starbucks. And another thing we could do was we could ask our friends to run our code. Just walk down the halls, say, hey, just go to this website, promise nothing bad will happen. Well, this is also not a great representative sample. But fortunately, people before us have figured this out. It turns out that in many things in life, you can solve a problem by throwing money at it. And Colin Jackson and Adam Barth have done this before. They found that you can just pay an ad network lots of money and they'll give you traffic. And so that's what we do. I want to stop and give some thanks to Colin Jackson. We had some trouble getting an ad network account. Evidently, they found our motives a little bit suspicious, so Colin let us use his account, which was awesome. But in any case, what actually happens in this campaign is that we pay the ad network money, and they will willingly put our JavaScript in banner ads all across the internet for whoever their publishers are. And in this JavaScript, we can cause the user's browser to load images. So in our case, we have 27 different images, a good sec, a no sec, and 25 different bad sec domains. These images are hosted on these domains, rather. And when we load those images, the browser has to make a request to our authoritative server, and then it'll pull down the image if the resolution was successful. So let's talk a little bit more in detail about the methodology. One of the things that that we were taking into consideration was that the load order, since we have 27 different images, the last image might succeed at a lower or higher percentage than the first image due to browsers just being weird. And as we found out, this was actually the case. So we'll see some more of that in a second. No, we won't, sorry. So another thing that we did was we relied on server-side information only for ground truth, meaning that we could ask the client to say, did this image succeed in loading? Were you able to resolve this domain? But it turns out the client doesn't really know what's going on half the time. We had some weird cases where the client would report one thing, we would see contrary results on our server logs, and then the client would report another thing. So the client just write out. We just relied on access logs. If we saw an image load for a NoSec domain, then we know that the resolution succeeded. And lastly, there's a risk that the clients in our study would navigate away from the page containing the browser, or the JavaScript and the ad. And this would influence our results by not giving certain resources a fair chance to resolve and load. So when all the images have either failed or succeeded in loading. Unfortunately, we had to rely on the client to decide when this has happened, but we don't rely on the client for the actual outcome. When the client decides that all the images have succeeded or failed, it sends us a completion signal, which is just, it fires off a DNS request and says, all right, everything here is done, this data is good to go. And so now if any clients didn't send us the signal, we know, all right, maybe we shouldn't look at this data. So we paid for 10,000 impressions every 2 hours for a week. This turned out it's really inexpensive, only cost $420. And the reason that we ran every 2 hours was that there were some diurnal effects. Failure rates would rise and fall throughout the day. And so spreading it out over a week helped smooth these over. Over the course of this week, we measured just over 500,000 clients spread out or using 35,000 unique resolvers. And these clients were spread out over 6,446 different ASs. Over the course of measuring this huge number of clients, we actually did learn some interesting things. I lied earlier, we do have this slide. Turns out that when you're doing something in a browser and you're loading tons of resources, not tons, I'm sorry, 27 resources, the order that you load things does matter. So we can see on this graph here that on the x-axis we have the position of a resource. It's been randomized, so we can't say for sure that the zeroth resource is always no sec or always good sec or always this particular flavor of bad sec. Just the zeroth resource always loads at the percentage, the fail rate that's given on the y-axis. And so we see that the failure rate rises slowly up until about the seventh or eighth resource, and then suddenly drops off, and then continues rising again. We showed this graph to people at Mozilla, and all they could say was, huh, that's weird. We don't really have an explanation for this, but the takeaway here is that you do see a small effect when you're measuring multiple things in a single browser-based measurement study. And so the range of percentages here is 0.6%, which if you're measuring a very small effect, this can actually influence your results. So it's very important that we randomized our image loads. And so let's have a first look at the data here, or what the high-level results are. So what we would expect, remember, is that NoSec would never fail because it's a normal DNS record. Why would it fail to load? GoodSec would also never fail because a validating resolver should be fine with it, and DNSSec is supposed to be backwards compatible, right? And BadSec should fail 100% of the time because everybody is validating DNSSec. As it turns out, this is not the case. BadSec is down there at 2.6%. That's not a whole lot. And so we go back to the question of who are we actually helping? What percentage of the users are we helping? And so that's the difference between BadSec and GoodSec. These are people who, when they saw an invalid DNSSec record, they said, nope, go away. This is only 1.655% of our users. And I should mention that these the plus or minuses here are 99% confidence intervals. So we're fairly certain that these numbers are significantly different. This is where the fact that we have 500,000 clients comes into play. If we had fewer, then these error boundaries might overlap and we wouldn't have a result. But a big data set has a lot of statistical power. And the other group of people that we're concerned with when deciding should I turn on DNSSec is how many people am I hurting by turning this on? How much traffic am I going to lose if I turn on DNSSec? And it turns out that this is the difference between GoodSec and NoSec. NoSec meaning that they have no DNSSec, and when we turn on DNSSec, even if it's good, all of a sudden we start to lose 0.22% of our traffic. So I need to take a step back though, because the difference between NoSec and GoodSec here is not universal. It turns out it's highly localized. So basically what we did was some coarse-grained geolocation based on the resolvers that made requests. The Regional Internet Registry is an entity that assigns numbers and they get handed out address blocks and then they further hand them out. So basically if you take the RIR, you can kind of say where an IP address is in which continent. So we have Afronik, which is Africa, Aran, which is America, Apnik, which is Asia Pacific, Laknik, which is Latin America, and Ripe, which is Europe. And in this graph, we see grouped by each internet registry, the NoSec, GoodSec, and BadSec failure rates with 99% confidence intervals. As we would expect, NoSec, GoodSec, and BadSec, in that order, have the lowest to highest failure rates. And in all cases, except for Apnik, NoSec and GoodSec have non-statistically significantly different failure rates. But in the Asia-Pacific region, there's a rather large difference between NoSec and GoodSec's failure rates, which is kind of weird. But it kind of says that it's not as scary as I might have made it look on the last slide as far as hurting your users. Maybe if your users are all in Asia, then bad things could happen. But so let's try to dig down and see why Asia-Pacific is doing so bad. What's going wrong? Well, we found out that packet size had some impact. And the background here is that DNS, which was designed in the 80s, has a packet size limit for UDP transmission of 512 bytes. And this is just due to historical reasons and trying to be compatible with all network elements and not overloading anything or having things be truncated. But in the modern era, packet size or DNS packets got larger, especially with DNSSEC. So DNSSEC has to use some workarounds, and these specs do support this. DNS resolution can fall back to TCP if the server explicitly supports it. The server doesn't have to. It's a should in the RFC. But also all the network elements between the resolver and the authoritative name server have to support TCP for it to work. Another option is what's called the EDNS0 pseudo resource record, which allows clients and other DNS elements to announce that they support having UDP datagrams up to some size. So it's not uncommon to see somebody say, oh yeah, just send me UDP packets up to 4,096 bytes. It's fine, my network can handle it, everything's gonna be fine. And we'll see that each of these workarounds creates their own problems in their own way. So let's see what TCP does. Well, if we filter out all those clients for which they don't announce compatibility with DNSSEC, meaning we only look at the clients who are going to be receiving these increased size packets, we found that only 4% of them actually fall back to TCP. And so the effect of falling back to TCP, though, as we can see in this figure, is very pronounced. Each of these clusters of columns is a UDP is the NoSec, GoodSec, or BadSec class of domains, and each of those bars is the failure rate. So the gray bar is UDP, is the failure rate over UDP, and the white bar is failure rate over TCP. And so we see for GoodSec, if you stay on UDP, your failure rate is pretty much the same as NoSec. But if all of a sudden you fall back to TCP, you're having this huge failure rate, which is definitely significantly different. Similarly for BadSec, we see the same effect. And this is kind of counterintuitive because we say, oh, TCP is reliable. Everything's gonna get there. But still we have a higher failure rate because browsers are weird. They give up when things take too long. Things had to fall back to TCP. There's a handshake, more round trips. It's unclear exactly what happens, but browsers do it. And what's more interesting is that if anything fell back to TCP, so NoSec never fell back to TCP, that's why we don't have a white bar there on the far left column. If any of the GoodSec or BadSec resources actually fell back to TCP in the resolution, the NoSec in that same experiment had a higher failure rate, 0.762 up to 1.080. So just having anything go back to TCP for DNS resolution poisons everything else. This is another unexplained effect that we've seen. So the other workaround that we talked about was the announcing a larger UDP max size. And it turns out that clients have to get this right, otherwise bad things happen. They can't, if they announce 4,096 bytes, but their network really doesn't support it, what they'll do is they'll fail on that request because the response will get truncated on the way back, and they'll have to try again with a smaller value. This adds more round trips and ends up causing more problems. We saw this in 13,000 of the test images. This sort of PathMTU probing behavior happened, and the effect was very large. For those test resources that didn't have to fall back to a lower and lower PathMTU, they only failed 2.52% of the time. However, those that did fall back had a 14% failure rate. This is another weird, unexplained effect that we saw in this large data set of ours. So let's have a look at some interesting cases in our data. In January of 2012, Comcast announced that it would be deploying DNSSEC validating resolvers to all their customers. So now if you're a Comcast customer and you're browsing the web at home, you are protected by DNSSEC validation. There were only 582 end hosts in our data set that were that mapped into Comcast's dynamic IP address space. But if we remember, we want NoSec to have a 0% failure rate, GoodSec to have a 0% failure rate, and BadSec to have a 100% failure rate. And as you can see over here, we're doing pretty well, or Comcast is doing pretty well. They're doing considerably better than the average. They are almost at 0% for GoodSec and NoSec. And BadSec is up at 92.5%. And now you may be wondering, well, what if some of these people are configured to use Google or their friend Fred has a DNS server that he wants you to try out? Well, if we restrict our client set to only those who used Comcast ASN resolvers, or AS resolvers, we have a 99% failure rate. So Comcast is doing pretty good. Now, on the other end of the spectrum, we have this ISP, which we'll just call ISPX for right now, that does really bad in all sorts of ways. So one of the things that we did was we created a real domain name, but it was one of the BadSec domain names. And the reason that it was a BadSec domain name was that it never sent the signature with address records. This is like the whole point of DNSSEC, is to have the signature for your A records. So if a DNSSEC validating resolver sees one of these responses, it should go, no, something's missing here, and disregard it. But turns out that for this one ISP, they failed to reject this sort of tampering 100% of the time. This is really bad. But the other BadSec flavors, they did reject 100% of the time. So it's not that they weren't checking, it's just that they weren't checking this thing. Very important thing. And also, these guys, if we remember, Asia Pacific had that huge gap between NoSec and GoodSec, people who were getting harmed by turning on DNSSEC. Well, there were 49 resolvers that were involved in that sort of behavior. Their clients were having worse performance just because DNSSEC was turned on. 45 out of those 49 resolvers belonged to the same ISPX. So the customers of this ISP are having a universally worse experience. If we turn on DNSSEC and they're using one of these resolvers, then they're not going to catch tampering. This is very easy tampering, by the way. This is just like dropping a record. This is the first thing you would do if you were an attacker. And they would have a harder time reaching your site, even if you succeed in signing your DNS records correctly. So to sum up, we set out to answer the question, should I turn on DNSSEC? Is it right for me? And to back the conclusion with some sort of data. And so what we found was that at most 2.661% of clients are protected by some sort of DNSSEC validation. This is an upper bound. In reality, it's somewhere, it was the difference between BadSec and GoodSec, which was 1.5%. However, to balance that off, that small benefit, there's this 0.22% of traffic that suddenly suddenly disappears if you turn on DNSSEC. And we found that this was due largely to TCP fallback. So if things improve and suddenly people's DNS infrastructure starts supporting TCP fallback better, this 0.22% might vanish. We also found that this 0.22% is highly localized to the Asia Pacific region. So if you're launching a domain and you want to turn on DNSSEC and you don't care about your Asia Pacific traffic, maybe you don't cater to the Asia Pacific region at all, then maybe this 0.22% can be completely ignored. But for the time being, if you care about Asia Pacific, then DNSSEC may not be for you, but this is the hard data, and this is what we found. That's all I have.
We'll take questions at the mic. Also, if you're asking a question, if you could identify yourself.
Hi, Avishai Wall from Tel Aviv. Very nice work. I have not a question, but possible hypothesis for the difference between UDP and TCP.
Okay.
And that might be firewalls and middleware.
That's completely
possible. You need a different rule to allow TCP traffic for DNS, and some organizations just don't allow that because the assumption is that you only do zone transfers over TCP, and so unless you're running your DNS server locally, why would you need to open that? Just keep it closed. You only want your UDP open for client to server questions.
That's right. Yeah, TCP port 53 is fairly important, and it's not fair to say that everybody supports it. Observation. Thanks.
Frank Imason, University of Waterloo. So you mentioned the failure rate for enabling DNSSEC, but do we have an inkling of how many attacks on DNS are out there? Like, if there was no attacks, then DNSSEC wouldn't be useful, but if there's a lot of attacks, is this failure rate, can we live with it?
Well, the more attacks you have, the more valuable DNSSEC becomes.
Right.
So, I don't know. This isn't a number that we studied, okay. This depends on your domain. If you're a bank, you're going to have more attacks than if I'm running a blog on cats. So, we have the data that you can plug into an equation and say, all right, if my probability of attack is very high, then all of a sudden this 0.22 doesn't really matter, but if my attack probability is low and I have a lot of traffic, then this 0.22 starts eating into traffic that is never going to need protection.
Okay, thank you.
Any more questions? Actually, I'll ask a quick one. Have you considered any sampling biases due to ad blockers?
That's a possibility, certainly. We didn't do any targeting as far as our ad network campaign goes, but that could certainly mean that people who have ad blockers are more tech savvy and thus have better DNSSEC validation in place. So we didn't look into that.
Jethro Beekman, UC Berkeley. Can you narrow down the geographic location a bit more than just APNIC, like by country?
This ISPX was in the Philippines.
Okay, yeah, because the reason I'm asking is maybe if the large portion of the failure of BATSEC is in, or the failure in GoodSEC is in China, it might be related to their censorship or something like that.
Yeah, like I said, a large proportion of the culprits for the ISPX stuff was not in China, which would have been interesting, though.
Okay. Just another question.
I'm Hai Xin Duan from Tsinghua University, Beijing. My question is, how do you simulate the active attack for the bad sack?
Because 202A or a validating resolver, an active attack looks a lot like the authoritative name server sending something with botched botched signatures or botched signature fields or something like that. So we wrote those to a disk file and the server just served up invalid signatures and so forth.
So the resolver can get only one bad sack, right?
There were 25 different types of it.
Okay. No, you did. The resolvers cannot get a duplicated answer from the authority name server, right?
Not get. I'm not sure I understand.
So, can an attacker inject another DNS answer for your resolver, and so the resolver get two duplicated DNSSEC resolvers. So
the attacker could do this, but we don't try to simulate that particular attack.
Okay.
Unless the network does it for us.
Thank you.
Okay. I'm afraid we're out of time for. Is this a very quick question?
I was going to ask, on remediation at ISPX, when you told them, resolver were they using, obviously not bind, or was it just a misconfiguration? Did they?
They were tight-lipped. They didn't respond. They said we'll pass it up to a team, but never got back to me.
Well, then you should name and shame them.
Okay, let's thank our speaker one more time.